Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Is the cell like a computer? Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting from Seattle, Washington, and we have on the show with us today Dr. Donald Johnson, author of the book Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. Dr. Johnson holds two PhDs, one in Computer and Information Sciences from the University of Minnesota, and another PhD in Chemistry from Michigan State University. And I think we've had Dr. Johnson on the show before talking about his book, Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability. So, Dr. Johnson, thank you very much for coming on the show with us again.
It's good to be here.
Well, Dr. Johnson, I think that you're uniquely situated to discuss the science of how the cell is like a computer, given your background in both computer and information sciences, as well as in the natural sciences and chemistry. So I'd like to ask you, did your background in the natural sciences inspire you to study computer science?
Yes, in a way, I got into computers as a tool for interfacing and collecting and analyzing data for scientific instruments and things like that. And after going back to school again to get a PhD in computer and information science, I started to realize more and more that life is really like a computer system. And as I got into it deeper and deeper, I found it was considerably more complex than the most complex computer system I've ever encountered or heard about.
So, given your background, can you explain to our listeners what exactly is programming code, and does the cell use programming code?
Yes, it does use programming code. Programming code is what is called prescriptive information as to how to handle the incoming data. Maybe I should talk just briefly about data. There's the difference between data and information. Data is very generic and includes all kinds of things. Information, on the other hand, functional information, has rules that it goes by and it has meaning. And prescriptive information, that's very meaningful also, but that is information that instructs the computer what to do, how to handle data. For example, let me use a word processor as an example. If you had a trained monkey sitting at the keyboard typing away for hours, you would generate a considerable amount of data, but that data would have no information in it in the traditional sense. Now, it would have what's called Shannon information, which just has to do with the complexity of data, but it doesn't have to have any meaning. But it wouldn't have any functional information because there was nothing meaningful being typed. If you use that word processor to type in a computer program, however, that would be prescriptive information. It would tell, for example, typing the word processor program itself would be a prescriptive information on as to what to do with the data, how to handle the keystrokes as they come in. Is that keystroke data or is it control code that tells us to do something else? All those kinds of things. So there's all kinds of different ways of looking at data and information, and the difference is significant and important. The computer, the cell is a computer system because it has in it how to handle the incoming data, the information. The main memory of the cell's computer is in the DNA, and that DNA is shared by multiple enzyme computers that read the DNA code. The DNA itself is just like RAM in a computer that stores data, and some of that data could be information, and the computers that read that information decide how to handle that information, whether it be like the RNA polymerase, for example, will read the DNA code and generate messenger RNA to send off to generate proteins and so forth.
So, Dr. Johnson, you may have already answered this question, but if a cell is like a computer, what exactly is it computing?
Well, it's computing a number of different things. It has messaging. It has error detection and correction. It makes a number of different decisions, for example, on when to divide. All living organisms start out as one single cell, and when does the cell divide into two cells? In the multicellular organisms, there reaches a point where the single cell zygote needs to differentiate the cells to form different types of organs and tissues and so forth. And all of those things are built into the initial DNA code. that are read by the computers that read the DNA shared memory within the cell. There's input and output instructions. In a lot of ways, a cell is like a computerized factory with a number of different interacting computers that process and communicate the data between the different computing systems that are in each cell. And each cell, for example, in the human being contains millions of computers, and that's in every single cell of the 300 trillion cells of the body.
Dr. Johnson, that is fascinating. And I've heard it said that the process by which the information in DNA is converted into protein is basically like a code conversion process where you're going from a four-character code, or I guess if you consider all the potential triplets of the nucleotides, then it could be a 64-character code to a 20-character code of the 20 amino acids in proteins. So do you see this as correct? And if so, what are the implications for the origin of the code itself?
Well, that is correct for the generation of proteins from the DNA sequence. And there is a triplet of the bases. So you have each base is one of four, and so you have four cubed or 64 different possible what are called codons. Those are the basic information units for the system to transfer between the codes of differing system types. And it takes the 64-character code or symbol code and translates it to a 20-symbol amino acid code. You have a question about what does that have to do with the origin of the code. In information theory, there's a phenomenon known as the Shannon channel capacity, and that would require that any predecessor of a code be at least as high in information-carrying capability as its successor. And what that means ultimately is that if we look at the information content-carrying capability of the current codon-based code, the successor of that had to be at least that complex. And if there were successors to that, that would have to be at least as complex as its successor, and so forth, all the way back to the very beginning. And what that ultimately says is the very first information handling system of life had to be at least as complex as the current information handling capability of life. Otherwise, the Shannon channel capacity would be exceeded, and from information science, that is impossible.
Dr. Johnson, Richard Dawkins once said a quote that has been requoted quite a bit. He said that, quote, "The machine code of the genes is uncannily computer-like. Apart from differences in jargon, the pages of a molecular biology journal might be interchanged with those of a computer engineering journal." Can you comment on this quote, and to what extent do you agree with what he's saying?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with what he said in that quote, that indeed the code of life, the genomic code, is very much like computer code. They're digital. Each symbol is what's called segregated. It has a meaning with a very few symbols, and it's linear in that it can be put into a sequence. So it is very much like a computer code. So I agree with his statement, and I think it's amazing that he can make such a statement and still believe that such a coding system could arise by undirected processes, because there is no instance of coding systems arising by undirected processes.
Dr. Johnson, another origin of life theorist, Bernd Olaf Kuipers, said that, quote, "The problem of the origin of life is clearly basically equivalent to the problem of the origin of biological information." Do you agree with this statement?
Yes. All life as we know it requires information and information processing systems. There have been lots of unsubstantiated speculation that perhaps life didn't have the information systems, but that all life as we know it has the information processing systems in it, and they're fundamental to the operation of life. And there is no life without that, and therefore you can make a statement that there's no scientific basis for assuming that you can build up the information processing systems from non-information processing systems, since all we know about life is that it has the information processing systems. And the first life had to have had those information processing systems, and there's no basis at all for assuming that life could exist without them.
There are a lot of eminent biologists who have compared DNA to having a digital code. Leroy Hood co-authored a review article in Nature in 2003 titled "The Digital Code of DNA," where they said that DNA can carry any digital message or information. Seth Lloyd, professor of mechanical engineering at MIT, also said that DNA has a digital nature, and Francis Collins has called DNA a digital code. So why, in your opinion, does DNA have a digital code?
Well, why is a philosophical statement, but I can say, but it does have a digital code. The code is based on the four bases, so it's basically a base four numbering system that exists in the DNA as storage element. And it's fortunate for computer people is that the base four makes it real easy to represent in binary digital computers, because any base four digit can be represented by a two-digit binary code, and therefore it's really easy to implement and do all kinds of searches with computerized analysis of DNA and so forth. But it is definitely digital, and the idea that the sequences are completely non-deterministic by anything other than what is called choice contingency. There's nothing about law that forces the sequence to be in a particular order. Then that's what determines what information is. If it didn't have a choice, if it was determined by some law that it had to have that sequence, then it would not be information, because a certainty contains no information. It's only when you have choice contingency, where the same storage digit can be set to differing values, that makes those values be capable of handling information, carrying information. And that can be done only with choice contingency.
Dr. Johnson, I've heard it said that you could put all of the parts for a computer in a box and then shake up the box, but you still won't have a computer. Could you speak to that argument and explain about how the cell's computer-like nature speaks to its origin?
Well, the components of a digital computer, for example, if you just had a box of them, you could shake it for all you want, and you're not going to get a working computer. The thing that makes something functional is when you have all of the components working together. For example, in living organism, a cell, for example, for a cell to be alive, it needs fully functional DNA, fully functional RNA, it needs ribosomes, it needs proteins, including the enzymes, it needs adenosine triphosphate to supply energy, otherwise the reactions would not take place. Some of the reactions of life, if you didn't have the enzyme, for example, would take a trillion years, and that obviously is not going to be compatible with life. With an enzyme, it reduces the reaction time to about 1/100 of a second, which makes it possible to use them. And what's really interesting is that the proteins that are needed by life are also manufactured in the cell, so that the manufacture of any protein requires more than 150 other proteins in order to manufacture any one of those proteins. And the protein manufacturing process requires enzymes. Enzymes are simply proteins that make reactions go faster. All of them require ATP as an energy source. ATP itself requires not only specific DNA code, but also requires 10 specific proteins, and it requires ATP. So you have all of these things have to be fully functional and fully operational in order for there to be life. And without that, you don't have life.
Dr. Johnson, I'd like to ask you one final question here. We sometimes hear from folks that the cell does not have a computer-like nature, or that DNA is not digital in the way that it carries information. So what would you say to someone who is arguing that the cell isn't computer-like or doesn't have a digital nature?
Well, I would ask that person to show me from information science where the digital code that's stored in DNA and the sequences that are reading the DNA and handling the processing, the messages, and doing the error correction and so forth, to show me why that isn't the same types of things and operations that computers do. It's also significant that there have been computers that have been made using enzymes and DNA, so that the idea that it isn't, that has been proven. In fact, even back in as early as 1994, I believe it was, when Edelman first did his work at University of Southern California, he showed that it was conceivable for there to be a DNA-based computer, and he proved that could be what is called Turing complete, in fact, which is one of the characteristics of a computer, is that it have a program that would be haltable. You can stop the program. It just doesn't go on and on forever. So a halting computer program is part of the computability that is necessary. And the Israelite, the Weizmann Institute, I think it was 2004, actually developed an enzyme computer that was functional, and they used it for dispensing some anti-cancer drug, so it can be used. And this was a designed computer that was biological, so it would be hard for a computer scientist to acknowledge or to not see that there is computing aspects in the cell and in life, and everything that I've seen as an information scientist indicate that it is a computer system. Now, biologists often don't like to admit that because it becomes very difficult to explain, well, where did this information and information processing come from? And, you know, that's one of the unanswered questions, but basically every source of information and every source of programming, and it's very difficult to try to explain how did undirected natural processes write these computer algorithms to do all these things. And that becomes extremely difficult. So just accounting for the information, which, for example, Carl Sagan acknowledges that every cell has in it the equivalent of 100 million pages of the Encyclopedia Britannica, as far as the information content is concerned. But even that pales when you start considering the information processing systems within the cell, which would require writing the algorithms to make decisions, and to come up with an undirected process for that is really ludicrous from a computer science perspective or an information science perspective. Can I also plug my newest book, the light version, which was written for non-scientists so that it's a little bit easier to read than the first one that came out? By the way, this first one that came out has been in print now for almost 10 months. And so far, there has been nothing that has been against it, of a scientific nature. Some people have come against it philosophically, but nothing scientifically saying that anything I wrote in it is wrong.
Well, Dr. Johnson, you say things like that on this podcast, and there's a good chance that somebody's going to pick it up now and write a criticism, but that's okay. That's what this is all about. It's about having a good back and forth, and we've seen a lot of folks finally paying attention to signature in the cell now and writing criticisms to that. They've been pretty weak criticisms, and there have been a lot of rebuttals written, but I think it's good to ask folks to give you peer review and critical feedback.
Well, I look forward to that kind of thing because the possibility that I'm misunderstanding something is there, but yet from a scientific basis, these people who come against things strictly on a philosophical basis are basically counterproductive as far as I can tell. The ones that I would appreciate are the ones that say that is scientifically wrong for these reasons, and for people to say, and nobody has done that yet.
Well, okay. Dr. Johnson, if someone does come and critique either your book, Probability's Nature and Nature's Probability, or the new light version that you just shamelessly plugged, which I don't mind at all you doing, then maybe we'll give you a venue on the show to come and talk about what the critical response has been and let you respond to some of those critics. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time. We appreciate you being on the show. I'm Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.